From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Alan Young. Today, we're excited to start a new recurring segment on Insight, Chalk Talk. It's a series about our local schools and the policies and developments that affect our students. I'll be standing up at the chalkboard with Shristi Prabha, CAP Radio's education reporter. Shristi is here live in the studio to talk about how the new school year is shaping up. Shristi, welcome to Insight.
Thanks, Alan. You also welcome to Insight.
I know, I'm just starting out here. Well, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what drives your passion for this education beat that you're on.
Obviously, you know, as a first-generation immigrant, education helped me understand the world around me, especially one that my parents didn't recognize here in the U.S. So I really, really, you know, I'm grateful to the education system. Then obviously, you know, I thought about how education is the future, and I don't mean that necessarily for job access or even income stability. Education is known to drive informed voting practices, which we found, you know, a Pew Research poll shows this. And I know this is an election year, but politics runs everything around us, right? So it's better to have a generation that's like well-equipped to vote and just help the world around them. What is your relationship to education?
So I started as an education reporter, started my journalism career here in Sacramento, 2008. I was a state education reporter, mm-hmm. So I was covering, this was like the tail end of the President George W., right. No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. President Obama came in, and people might not remember, he was more on the conservative side on education policy.
Interesting.
He was a big charter school proponent, him and his education secretary, Arne Duncan, and was pushing this race to the top, which had school districts competing with each other for test
resources.
Results and for money. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stopped doing that and haven't really had any involvement in the school system until I had kids.
Yeah.
I now have a 5-year-old and she is starting kindergarten at Sac City Unified, which we'll be talking about. Last year, we were able to get her in transitional kindergarten, TK. Mm-hmm. And it was such a headache. I mean, it was a giant relief because we literally saved thousands of dollars on childcare. And as you know, I mean, like, you know, people with young kids, moms and dads, or, you know, some people are going back to the workforce or taking on a second job just to afford childcare.
Mm-hmm.
Shristi, we literally had to win a lottery to snag a spot in TK. And we were totally privileged because my wife is a former history teacher. She taught 8th grade history, so she knows how to navigate the system. We had the time and money to do that. But I assume other families don't know the system. So,
absolutely.
Shristi, what's going on with TK?
I mean, TK, isn't that the big Gavin Newsom initiative that we've all been talking about? He talks about it quite often, too, just FYI. But, you know, you probably did have an easier time navigating it. And I think there's a lot of barriers to things like open enrollment and the lottery system. But the idea is that the TK program should exist at every elementary school by the 2025-2026 school year, with $2.7 billion of ongoing funding for the program. But, you know, data is already showing that Black parents are not enrolling their students in California. And, you know, that's the PPIC showed us that. And you're going to have them on later. And
right.
People will hear about a totally different topic. But they do great research. And that's, you know, the benefits of a TK program is you don't have to pay for childcare. You can have 2 working income parents if that's what you want or not. And, you know, students get a head start on their education, whereas like before there was inequity with some kids getting access to better childcare, maybe where they're getting, you know, more educational support than other students. So overall, I think it's going to be great once we do it and implement it.
Yeah, I mean, we were really happy for our daughter to get in. She loved it once she was there. Other mm-hmm. families, other friends we have were not able to get their kid in TK. So where are we at with TK just here in our Sacramento region?
From what I understand, it's been way easier for smaller districts to implement, which makes sense, right? There's a lot that goes into creating a whole new program. So Natomas, which only has like 10 elementary schools, all of their schools have a TK program. But then if you look at Sac City Unified, only 39 out of 46 of their elementary schools have it. And then San Juan Unified, like 42 out of 48 of their elementary schools have it. But they're all getting close to that number of all of the schools having it.
So by next year.
So by next year, next school year, your kids should, if they're 4, should be able to enroll into a TK program in the county.
I'm happy to hear mm-hmm. that it's going to be accessible to everyone because we all deserve that. The other big buzz this year is on cell phones in class. So I was old enough. I first got a pager. My mom bought me a pager in middle school, that giant like black brick. And I had it on the outside of my belt because I thought that was cool. And then when I got to high school, I mean, people my age remember the Nokia phone. It had the game Snake on it and it took forever to text. And I don't think it occurred to me to like take out my phone in class because in those days you used your phone as a telephone, right? What was your experience with phones in school?
I'm sure a lot of people don't even know what a pager is now. And when you say that, you put it on your belt. You know, that was like the dad move.
I thought it was cool.
By the time I was in high school, that was not cool. But we were the era of like the razor and the I had a chocolate. And really, it was like you could try to text in class. So you started to see it'd be a little more of a distraction where people would be pressing one number like three times. They would memorize it so they could text under the table. But it was like there weren't so many things that you could do on your phone. And now we're in a totally different era with the cell phones, right?
Right. So, I mean, just this year, Governor Gavin Newsom sent out a letter urging all school districts in California to adopt policies that restrict cell phone use in the class and outside of the class, I guess. I don't know. How are local districts responding?
So locally, we've seen some districts like Roseville City Unified School District already has enforced a mobile device ban across all their schools. And when I say mobile device, that's not even just a cell phone. That's like your iPad, your AirPods, anything that can have access to like social media or communication with other people. But then that's only a K-8 district. So it's much easier to enforce for younger students when, you know, high school students have a little more agency, have a little more are a little more opinionated. Then you look at, you know, the districts like Folsom Cordova, where they don't have a district-wide policy, but their middle schools have stricter bans on cell phones, and then their high schools up until this year didn't have any.
So what are teachers saying about this? Have you talked to any teachers?
Yeah, teachers are saying how, you know, a lot of students have anxiety due to the phone. They're seeing a lot of mental health challenges. They're seeing bullying. But in the schools that are implementing the change, they're seeing tremendous behavior improvement. So Chaitra Banglora, teacher at Cordova High School, I spoke to her. She was saying last year, she told me a story of a student, you know, watching an entire show on their phone while screen printing with the other hand, which is kind of crazy to think about. They didn't put down their phone to actually do something like a physical activity in art class. And then she said this year, the school year started and the kids were more attentive. No one was pulling their phone out because they've instituted a new cell phone policy.
So are the students saying, no, don't take our phones? Or are they going like, yeah, this is actually a relief. Like I'm on my phone because everyone else is, but I'd rather not. Like what are students and their families saying?
So I talked to, you know, the school board trustee in Natomas, and they were saying they did a survey to poll families and students, and they were seeing actually students coming and advocating to have a cell phone policy, even parents. I'm sure the students are in the minority and the parents are in the majority. But yeah, it seems like this isn't like a controversial idea to limit cell phones in schools.
How far away are we from like a policy for the whole state? Or like it seems like there's this patchwork in our Sacramento area. Are we at least close to like maybe a uniform policy in a district or in the whole region?
It's a good question. So like when you think of policies district by district, they're different. School by school can be different. But AB 3216 was actually running through the state legislature, which would require limiting cell phone use in schools. And it passed just late last night. So we are going to have this. All schools will have to adopt it. And I am so glad that I don't have to deal with it because I like using my cell phone at work. But yeah, it's going to be a full statewide policy.
Well, if the governor signs it.
Right? If the governor
signs
it.
Right, right. So we're still waiting on that. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with education reporter Shristi Prabha for a new series called Chalk Talk, where we chat about our schools in the capital region. So, Shristi, our plan is to focus on different school districts in our region. For our maiden voyage today, we decided to chat about Sacramento City Unified School District. Mm-hmm. What's the big news out of Sac City?
Well, I think a lot of parents and maybe the community are well aware that the district started a couple weeks early this year. And do you know why that is?
Can you remind me?
Of course. So we started 10 days early because we were fined for not having as many educational days the previous year, which meant the $40 million fine that we were supposed to pay, Sac City Unified was supposed to pay, actually goes right back into Sac City Unified.
So early start date, I know this caused some consternation among, you know, parents, some teachers. How are we supposed to feel about this? Like, I feel like Sac City Unified has had this cloud of dysfunction hanging over its head for years. At least that's the media narrative. Is this late start a sign of even more dysfunction, or have they cleaned house? Are these dysfunction clouds kind of beginning to lift?
I feel cautiously optimistic. I think, you know, you have union negotiations that have been going really well the past year after the change in leadership. So when we went from Superintendent Jorge Aguilar to Superintendent Lisa Allen, all the union negotiations have gone quite smoothly. That said, you know, we're in a budget deficit year, so $8.4 billion are being drained from the Rainy Day Education Fund, which could impact next year's budget, and schools are hoping not to have to make any cuts. So, you know, it's a little up in the air. Money is always an issue.
But we're cautiously optimistic about where things are going.
We are, yeah.
Okay, cool. Good to hear. Now, you reported back in June that a grand jury found that Sac City Unified wasn't meeting the needs of its students with disabilities. Its special education programs actually broke the law. So, I was reading this news. I'm like, gosh, we all care about special needs students. But what really blew my mind about your story is that this population is like nearly 18% of the whole student body. It's nearly 1 in 5 kids.
It's a lot.
So, yeah. So with such a large student population, how did they drop the ball?
Yeah, the report kind of mentioned that, you know, they were not working with parents to develop and review individual education plans, so IEPs. They weren't implementing early intervention programs. They were putting students with disabilities in separate classrooms, which we actually know can harm their educational outcomes. So these were all big concerns coming out of the report. And then also, you know, you think about the teacher shortage. So special education teachers are a higher need group, and we just did not have enough of them.
And wasn't there a lawsuit filed against the district over this?
Yeah, there was the Black Parallel School Board, which filed it. The Black Parallel School Board is an unaffiliated board that is just kind of monitoring what's going on in the districts in Sacramento County. And they filed a lawsuit in 2019 about the special education practices in the district for Black youth, and they won. They actually are probably going to approve their improvement plan. Black Parallel School Board has given an improvement plan, and it might be approved today at the board meeting. So once it's approved, they're on a 5-year clock to resolve all of the deficiencies in their special education program.
Gotcha. So final question here. There's some St. Hope news. That was the network of charter schools. They were started by the former mayor, right? Kevin Johnson started St. Hope, or at least ushered it in. And so there was this audit that didn't look so good. What was that about?
An audit revealed significant concerns of the charter schools managed by St. Hope, which included conflicts of interest, questionable accounting practices, and underqualified teaching staff. I mean, it is a public charter school, which means it's being supervised by the district board. So the district is the one that ordered this audit.
And so how is this going to like impact St. Hope schools? What's in store?
So St. Hope wants to renew its charter for the coming school years, and Sac City Unified is reviewing it and is expected to have a decision at the board meeting on September 19th. So, you know, we don't know. We don't know if St. Hope is going to exist or the charter schools are going to exist in the way that they currently do. But I do want to note that they serve a predominantly Black and brown student cohort, and they have improved their literacy, math, and graduation rates after taking on the previous non-charter school.
So it's not all bad. So, I mean, they have been doing good work historically.
Yeah, they have been. So that's why we don't know what has been going on at the top levels of this.
Well, let's hope that they figure everything out.
Yep.
Shristi, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. And a call out. I'm writing a story on facilities bonds by districts. And if you have anything you'd like to add or tell me about in general, please reach out to me. I'm always here with open ears and want to know more.
Shristi Prabha is CAP Radio's education reporter. Up next, we talk to the Public Policy Institute of California about which jobs are still split by gender, race, and ethnicity, and what we can do about it. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Alan Young.